I think you have to give me the host privileges back.
I turn on the recording. Is that okay? Or?
Yeah, you turn it on. That's fine. That's all we need. Okay. Perfect. Okay. So, any updates on the UN thing? I didn't quite hear what you guys were talking about.
We are proceeding. So,
yeah.
We do have a document. You were asking for a document.
Right, that's what we were talking about.
What we created was a very short mission statement focusing more on the indicators and how we would help to create them than on the actual ontology work. But I am at the moment writing a longer paper describing the ontology components that we're trying to build.
Great.
And that will contain some discussion of CROP and the plant ontology. And perhaps even mention the stress ontology business that we were talking about, but I don't know how much detail I will be able to incorporate.
Great, great. Okay, that sounds good.
Oh, yeah, so the stress ontology is being built also, right, simultaneously?
Right, right. And I thought we might have time to talk about that today.
I want to talk about it because we just got a big chunk of funding for 5 years from the DOE to deal with nitrogen stress in theraphytic plants and plant conditions in Chile and California.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think the stress ontology then could work into that, and we're doing the molecular work on the stresses and how they.
Oh, wonderful.
So we might actually be able to link some gene ontology to a stress ontology.
Absolutely.
That would be really interesting, wouldn't it? I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Well,
great.
Congratulations
on
that grant. So, other updates in terms of hiring positions. Dennis, you said that you guys have made an offer to somebody?
Yeah, we've made an offer to a lady who's in Florida right now.
Right, right.
Any
idea on time frame?
Just because of doing things, I'm putting a graduate student on starting in about a week.
Oh, wonderful.
That's here. To be doing the work, not so much paid for by the grant. And a summer undergraduate intern. Because this imaging stuff, I need to move down the road. I just bought some imaging equipment off my Avital grant. So I want to start some of this imaging stuff to work with Justin. Try to move that forward. And I had an idea, because we're doing some of this now, would be to do the imaging of a structure or trait, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
And also do the in situs so that we can link a gene ontology to the structure to an in situ in terms of images. Which I think I'd like to do a test case, and I'll do something straightforward, you know what I mean? A very straightforward one, like some early genes either in leaf development or in procambium, which is easy to demonstrate.
That'd be really interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
And something that you can, that the structures are fairly discrete for the labeling software, yeah.
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 So that's really something I want to get done this summer, is to have some examples of that. And then work that out with Justin, because maybe, I don't know, you know, they do the recognition stuff. I mean, they can do it by recognizing patterns. But in some instances, I think it's about recognizing a pattern and a color.
Oh.
Like with an in situ, see if it says that, then you know you're supposed to have a certain color.
Right.
And a certain pattern.
Yeah, so you're wondering if they can bring in like color recognition as well.
Yeah, I'm curious as to that.
So they're kind of moving ahead. Justin and the graduate student Zhu Zhu just went down to a BISC workshop in Santa Barbara. So they're proceeding with that. Although I don't know anything about color recognition. Have you been communicating with Justin Priest at all?
I haven't. Recently.
Yeah.
But I'll do that. I'll hop onto that when I have the people.
Yeah, they have.
We'll set something up to talk about. And so I know what to send them, you know, because we did all those other things. And they're nice. They're up on the website, I think.
Yeah, I think they're doing like a weekly meeting on Thursday afternoons.
Okay.
But you can communicate with him.
I'll communicate with him. This well,
that's yeah. great.
Other than that, yeah.
That's great. So do you have any idea when your postdoc might be starting?
Well, hopefully within, within the month, okay. this month.
Yeah, that's great. So we're kind of in the same situation. We have an offer out to a potential postdoc candidate, kind of waiting to hear back from him. Hopefully that's going to happen by the end of June.
Yeah.
And we also have one undergrad student who's joining the lab. He's been working with me just for credit, like volunteer. Well, he's been working as kind of a research credit for the last term, and mm-hmm. he's joining for the summer. And then we have another one who's coming back in August. So that'll help because there's lots of stuff to do. And the last we heard from George, he had a position posted, but we haven't heard any update from him. And he's not on the call. So, okay. Well, maybe we should move ahead. Marie Angelique, do you want to introduce the pages you created? Hi, Pankaj.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, sure.
We're just getting an update from Barry and Dennis both. So I can fill you in on that after the call if you want. So, Marie Angelique, you want to go ahead and show us what you made here?
Yeah. So, do you have to share my screen?
Oh, right. Well, I should be sharing mine, or no? You can share yours if you'd like, yes.
Okay.
Or do you want me to share it from my end?
I don't, yeah, because
I can do it. I can do it.
Scroll your mouse on the Zoom screen, and there will be at the bottom, there will be option for a share screen.
And Google Chrome, okay. Share screen. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't. Okay. Maybe I've got the wrong window open here. Ah, there it is, okay. Hiding behind okay. mine.
So I created this page on the wiki. So basically it's just to explain what we have done so far on the crop ontology project. So we have it just explains the different file structures that we have and how we transform one format to another format. So first there is different categories that we have on the crop ontology. So we have ontologies for phenotype and trait, for plant anatomy, for germplasm information, for location, and for structural and functional genomics ontology. And so this is, there is basically three ways for creating ontologies on the website. So we can upload a trait dictionary, or we can upload directly an OBO file, and we can also build ontology from scratch using the website. And so all the data are stored in the NoSQL database, that is a Google App Engine data store. So this is a list of the crops that we have with the ID that we are using. And then after on the page, I'm just explaining the different structure of the files that we have. So this is the structure of the thread template. So this currently we are using the thread template version 4, but we are moving to the thread template version 5. Where you can see the main changes have been made on the introduction of an attribute column and an entity column. We have also a ifsref for to have the TO term. Mm-hmm. Okay. And different information about the method and the scale. And then this is just a sort of mapping table between the TD, the thread template column, and how we translated this information into OBO. So that gave the structure of our OBO files. And I did the same for scores. So if you have any question.
So I think your ID, term ID includes a prefix. Where is the prefix?
Yeah. So in OBO, you mean?
Yeah. I think it's up higher.
It's a CO or something, or CGI.
That,
Right.
It's CO. So now we decided. So I have an answer for Elizabeth this morning. So
I changed
the name of the different repository on GitHub. So we don't want to use CGIAR. We want to use IBP instead of, yeah.
So IBP. Okay. So I think Pankaj was asking about the actual, remember last meeting we discussed the way to name the ontology with the prefixes? Excuse me. Right now it's like CO underscore and then this number, like 3 to 4, and then a colon and the 7 digits.
Yeah.
So did you guys discuss that at all?
So we discussed that a little bit last week. Elizabeth is not really in favor of changing the CO ID because a lot of people are already using those IDs. So that can be a problem. So that would be great if we can find a way to keep our IDs. Yeah, because I don't know, or to map to something, or yeah.
So I think it was Chris that had kind of brought up the concern about that.
Yes.
Let's just, could you either give me the screen back or...
Yeah.
Or go to the previous week's meeting.
To be honest, I don't know. Okay.
Here, I think I can just do it. Oh, I cannot. I think you have to stop sharing. It's right at the bottom of your screen. It should say stop sharing.
Oh, yes, stop sharing. Okay.
There we go. Now I can share mine. Oh. So I'll just show these notes from last time so that everybody's kind of up on what we talked about here. So this is what the concern was. I think this is addressing your question, right, Pankaj?
Yeah.
Yeah, about having these separate ID spaces. Right now they look like this. And so the discussion we were having was whether it was possible to maybe make them like this or, you know, 3, 3, 4, for example, and then 4 digits, 0-padded number. Yeah. So that's the topic that we're discussing right now. And so I think we need to maybe think about this a little bit more. But
I think the problem she's raised is that many resources might already be using it, so it's not a worthwhile situation now. I don't know how to track how many people are using it, but I think we should just continue with it. You may call the file name being IBP underscore whatever you want to call it. Instead of CGIAR, you can call it IBP on crop ontology. And then leave the CO, the numbers exactly as it is, because I think the file should recognize what those things are.
Yeah, I think changing the name of the repositories at GitHub is trivial, but...
Yeah, instead of CGI,
right,
just make it...
Right, well, that's a separate issue completely.
Yeah.
This was Chris's concern, was that having these separate ID spaces would be a problem. But we can come back to this another time when Chris is on the call and...
Yeah.
Discuss further. We don't have to do anything about it today, that's for sure.
So I think what we might do is to create a list of the ontologies with the existing namespace and ID procedures for each one, and then create in a parallel column a list of the ID and alphanumeric identifier, namespace ID, that Chris would like. And if Chris does his job properly, it should be that there is a one-to-one correspondence, which is at least perfectly easy to understand. And then when we see that, we should consider what we do next. So I think Chris has a point here. I think that we don't want a situation where within the ontology world of Obo Foundry, we have 47 biology, zoology, and human-related ontologies, and then 4,719 plant ontologies. There has to be a rough proportionality, which has to be created by means of the same approach to hierarchical organization that we have developed elsewhere. So the first thing we should see is what there is now, how it is described, both from the point of view of the namespace ID and the alphanumeric ID. And then what we need to see what Chris would like to do.
Right. And I think there was some issue in terms of importing it into Amigo 2, if I remember correctly. But maybe maybe it was more of an issue of having to register them all in the Oval Library.
I think the big advantage of doing what Chris wants is that Chris is working out the software issues connected with doing it that way very, very thoroughly for everything else. And the plant ontology is going to be left behind very soon. Because the plant ontology world is going to have to work with all the genomics and proteomics ontology content.
Yes, absolutely.
And so we need to aim for coordination.
Absolutely.
And the fact that there is a legacy community is usually solved by, first of all, creating a very simple mapping procedure and then warning people a year in advance that we will gradually be moving to the new setup of IDs. It's really a rather simple kind of change. In other cases, we've created software which would relabel all the occurrences automatically. And the software is not difficult to create.
Right, so maybe it's not really such a problem. We can just leave it the way it is on for your users and Marie Angelique, and then do some manipulation at the other end to map them to a common ID space. So,
okay, sure.
Good. Well, it's good that we got a chance to chat about it anyway. So thanks for creating these pages. I think that's really helpful, and it answers some of the questions that had come up before about the trait template.
Could we go back to the top?
Sure.
So we have a list there, a bit further. There. So with location and environment ontology. Could someone tell me what they are?
So Noel, can you go on the crop ontology one?
Sure. Yes. Obviously, a site I go to frequently. So we have these two.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, we have the crop research, so it just terms to describe experiment design and just location. So yeah.
Okay. So this is, I think, what used to be called EO. Is that correct?
No, this is
a different thing.
So who built this thing and when?
So Rosemary did it. I don't know. In maybe four years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, in 2010.
All right, good. So again, there is an issue of coordination here.
Right.
There is something called the environment ontology, which is designed to be a resource for describing environmental or spatial data quite generally, not just for plants, but for all organisms and for non-organism related spatial data. Now, I think that the focus of this work here is environmental conditions or environmental setups for experiments or for breeding conditions and so forth. And so we need to find a clear way of A, distinguishing the environment ontology content under these headings on the one hand, and the environment ontology, which already exists on the other side.
And Barry, just to be clear, you're not talking about ENVO, right?
I am talking about ENVO, yes.
Okay, because we also have the plant experimental conditions, which is EO, which you were asking about.
Okay, good. So then that we have three things. We have EO, we have environment ontology, and we have this thing that I see on the screen now. And so the experimental, this thing is experimental condition. That's something
right. So there's more overlap between the crop research ontology that we're looking at and the EO.
Yeah.
the experimental conditions ontology. Good. And that's something we need to address.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of these have been mapped.
No.
Yeah, so no. I think that the key here is that when a list is created, like the one that we saw a minute ago with environment ontology at the bottom, the five items, then that list should be created against the background of the other ontologies which CROP will have to work with, such as gene ontology, environment ontology, the OB, and so forth. So we shouldn't see the plant world of ontologies without seeing also how it fits to the wider omics and wider biology world of ontology. Because otherwise, we're just going to be rebuilding the same wheels, but with slightly different...
Yeah, I agree.
Right, absolutely. And you know, we're certainly aware of ENVO, but the purpose of this page was just to kind of explain what's currently on the crop ontology site.
So,
may I suggest that, can you describe a little bit what you just said on for those five different categories that you have on that page?
Like fill in more details here.
A little bit more detail about what is included in that.
And maybe put links to them. Right. That'd be nice.
My understanding, what we just saw was location and environment ontology. Actually, where is it gone?
Here, I can pull it back up.
I think these are two different classes. It's the country and location probably is your gazetteer kind of effort, and crop research one, which we just saw in detail, was an experimental design ontology kind of things. This is not, everything is not environment, although experimental design is not necessarily an environment thing.
Well, I think these are just kind of grouping headings that they have on the website. I don't think that's a big problem.
Yeah, but the problem is with the grouping and heading, people start considering that these are also the ontology classes. So it's a very thin line over there. So I think what you should list under those five headings is the actual ontology class.
Okay, I will.
Right, she can expand that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Marie-Angelique, maybe what you could do is this, in addition to that, that's a helpful suggestion, here where we have the list of crops and IDs, maybe we could just add a column. Maybe we could add a couple of columns, as Barry suggested, and have the actual prefix that's being used now, and then maybe another column with a proposed map to prefix, that like the one that Chris suggested.
Okay.
This would be a good place maybe to put it.
So yeah, I was to say current prefixes. So I think the current prefix for maize is CO_322.
Right.
It's not just 322, it is CO_32.
Yeah. So this could be modified. And then sort of a proposed, you know, if we're gonna try to map it to a common prefix.
So, Marie-Angelique, what happens is if in case we do go decide or converse on updating the ID string, what would happen is your existing IDs can go back as an alternative ID, so that anybody who's searching based on the existing IDs doesn't get lost. It will show as an alternate ID or a synonym somewhere. And that's how OboEdit actually has managed most of the time. Okay. So the your searches would still not be broken.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
And there could be, as Barry mentioned, there might be a clever way of, if a query comes on that ID, how to at the time of query, it can be converted to this thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so... kind of a process. We can keep discussing this as we move forward, and thanks very much for putting all this information together. And so just so everybody kind of understands, and I actually had a question on here too, these, most of the, on what we're calling the ontologies on the crop ontology website, are actually created as an Excel spreadsheet using this trait template, which is an Excel template, and then it's converted to an OBO file or a SCOS file, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are there any examples in this list below of ones that were actually built on this? You say that ontologies can be built from scratch using the website dedicated interface.
The Cocoa ontology, Cacao, I don't know how to pronounce it, has been
built. Cacao? Go to the crop ontology curation tool. I think there was an option somewhere.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm asking, were any of these ontologies created that way?
Yeah, so the Cacao ontology.
Cacao was? Oh, okay.
But it just, just a draft, and it's only few terms, but yeah.
Yeah. And where is that tool on here?
So you have to be logged in.
Oh, okay.
And then you go to add new terms. So if you go to add new terms at the
time of Bryce.
So here you can,
and then you decide. I see.
This is OBO. So you can, if you want to create an ontology from scratch, you have to go to create an ontology.
Ah, I see. Okay. And then you give it a name and an ID, or you can upload your template. I see. Oh, this is very helpful.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Good. Anybody else have any further questions about that? Let me get out of there. Can your users, do the users go in and add terms?
Yes, to upload their template, yes.
Yeah.
If you want to add a specific term to a specific ontology, you can go directly, but you need to have the right, so you have to be the owner of the ontology. And you just have to add a term in the tree. You have a little interface, a pop-up, or not a pop-up really, but some sort of thing. And then you can add a term directly in the hierarchy.
You could add a new term to the plant ontology.
Yeah.
Okay, so good.
You don't have, you have the right on plant ontology.
Yeah,
you have to edit. Can you
go
to the plant ontology?
Okay.
And you see the little edit, not this one on the left.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Ah.
Here you can edit you can change the category also, and you can have edit on every terms also. If you click on somewhere there is a edit, add new attributes.
Add new term.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Well, I better not do anything there. Better not mess anything up. Okay. All right. Well, let's move along here. I think we may have lost Dennis. Did we? Are Dennis, are you still on the call?
He's still on
the call. I'm here. If I turn the picture off,
things work better, yeah. I understand. Okay. Let's get back to our agenda here. So no further questions on that. Do we have an idea when the timeline for the conversion to the new trait template?
No, because it has to be discussed early July, I think.
Yeah.
And after,
they'll probably be talking about
summer,
it.
Maybe during the summer, but I don't know when.
Yeah. They probably have to converse about it during the meetings in Montpellier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in July, so. Okay, and then can you just explain what you're doing with the SCOS files?
So
the OBO files are converted to SCOS in order to put them on the website, or is that?
Because we wanted, some time ago, we had contact with Caterina Caracciolo from Agrovoc, and we wanted to add our threads in Agrovoc. So because they are using SCOS, we thought that it would be a good idea to also have a SCOS version of our ontology. So yeah, that was the idea, but yeah, we didn't work on that.
So my view is that you should not work on that until you have a good reason. So I'm beginning to know something more about Agrovoc through the UN work that we're doing. And The AgriVoc is regarded as being a little bit old-fashioned now. So the really intense ontology work that they were doing is 10 years out of date. And so if anything, they will take over from us rather than we take over from them.
So Barry, on that side, I think I should give an update, and I think we should discuss about the AgriVoc's role, because it is being extensively promoted by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and other other organizations to include it, because it's an FAO thing, you know.
Yeah, so there are two issues. One is AgriVoc. AgriVoc is obviously very important. The other issue is there is a small community within AgriVoc in Rome led by a man called Kaiser.
Which
did some ontology work. That AgriVoc ontology work was going to be incorporated into this UNEP ontology framework. But the say again, what did you just say?
GACS.
So
the name of the new project with USDA.
Oh, I see. Right, yes. So what they did, what AgriVoc did, was found not to be up to date. So in other words, they were using things which the other leaders in the bioontology community had stopped using some time ago. And so we shouldn't assume that what AgriVoc did with its ontologies is going to be worth copying. It could be the other way around, that they will copy from us.
Right. And I was, last month, I was at the National Agriculture Library looking at, because USDA and AFRI, their equivalent of NIH, is working on a data one policy where all the data has to be annotated and for there. And I think they already have some collaboration with the AgriVoc. So I think BMG and USDA funded that collaboration. And Simon Liu, who is leading effort from NAL side. We had a chat, and I think what we agreed is that we are doing it in a much more formal ontology way, whereas AgriVoc may, as you just mentioned, may or may not be very up to date. I think three of NAL, Plantiome, and AgriVoc has to work together on resolving some of the issues and how to integrate the efforts. I think it's because AgriVoc being coming from the satisfying the developing country needs and other stuff, and some of the other thesauri based efforts and translations in different languages. I think that's a plus point. And BMG's data analytics section, Stan Wood was there, so he was very much into involving AgriVoc in almost everything. Plantiome, he heard for the very first time, and he's very aware of the crop ontology work because of the IBP platform that they're going to work. And I heard BMG just funded an $18 million project on Gobi, which is developing the back office software application and database applications for plant breeding efforts in developing countries. And Cornell is leading that effort, and I believe AgriVoc is a big part of that effort kind of thing. It's a collaboration for five countries, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think we are not being integrated or being seen as a collaborating partner as of now, but I think we need to move very pretty quickly on that side.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a number of AgriVoc people at the meeting we're going to in Paris, and then some of the people from the meeting in Paris at the beginning of July are actually going to an AgriVoc meeting, which is later that week.
Mm-hmm. It's not really an AgriVoc meeting, it's a GACS meeting, and it's funded by the Bill Gates Foundation. So
From the Bill Gates Foundation?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I can check back with Simon Liu
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be going on.
Are you going to? Do you know yet, Marie Angelique?
No, I probably not going, but Elizabeth should go, yeah.
But yeah. Marie, I think, were you working with Johannes Kaiser?
Yeah, a few months ago I worked with him, but I stopped because I got this contract.
So Barry, there's your connection. She was the one working on Agrabah.
Okay. So I need to get more background also from my UN colleagues, but the original idea was that AgriVoc would be an active participant in this UNEP environment framework, but the upshot was that they themselves did not believe that they were actively engaged in ontology development work of this quality. Mm-hmm. Now, so that was something that they did 10 years ago, but now they're doing other things. Now, maybe I'm missing something there, but that was the message that we got.
Yeah, I think it's the same issue that's coming up, Barry, is that do you have resources to actually put your hands or developers' hands on actually developing it or show us the application? I think the field is changing very drastically.
Yeah, right.
And I think Johannes is caught up between that, whether he's doing active development versus active integration into the other stuff.
Maybe, Marie-Angela, could you send me the link to the GAX? Is there a website for GAX? Is it?
No, there's not a website. I'm not sure. But yeah, I would send you what I have. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't see anything here. Yeah. Maybe on a future call you could give us kind of an overview of, you know, your experience there and what I'm not that familiar with it. I'd like to learn more about it.
Yeah, sure.
It sounds like all of us are kind of interested in what they're doing and
okay.
And definitely, you know, maybe a report after the meeting in July if you go, or you could get Elizabeth to report on it.
Yes.
Great. Excuse me. There's a lot of pollen in the air right now. It's really bad here. I'm sorry, I just have to close my window because they're mowing or something outside.
Barry, do you have a connection at AgriVoc or is it still Johannes?
I don't have any other connection apart from Johannes.
Okay.
All right. What was that, Barry? You don't have any other questions?
I don't have any other connection.
Oh, okay. Good. All right, so we got a little bit sidetracked, but that was an interesting discussion. That's great. So we have a few minutes left, about 10 or 15 minutes left. So we can either talk about the disease ontology and plans for the stress ontology, or we can talk about the work. Marie Angelique's been doing some work on the mappings between the crop ontologies and the trait ontology.
I think, can we bring up the disease ontology?
Yeah.
Barry's okay. There, I'm here.
Yeah, and Dennis is here. Yeah, I think that this is a timely thing to talk about.
If you can show us.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do. So, I'm going to open a couple of, just let me close a couple of things here, and I will open. So, a while back, we started out developing just what we're calling the plant disease ontology right now. And what we started out doing was we were using there's a website called the American Phytopathological Society, and they have this, I'll show this to you. They have these lists of common names and what the plants that they infect. So we started this work about 2 years ago.
For rice?
Yes, we can go to the rice one. So this is an example of the information on the American Phytopathological Society. So along with an undergrad student that was working in the lab at the time, we started transferring this information into the beginnings of an ontology. So what we did actually was created... I can show you. We created spreadsheets for each of the crops that we were working on and started tabulating the different diseases. For example, these are the rice fungal diseases. And putting these together in terms of an ontology. So when we started out doing this, this is our notes with a bunch of links and so on for the students to work from. Since then, we've developed some other sources of information, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But let me just scroll down here. So when we started doing this, we set up some guiding principles. And of course, like all of our ontologies, we want to adhere to the OBO Foundry principles. So our initial goal was to transfer the information from the APS site into an ontology structure, and we were initially using OBOEdit and still are right now. But our goal was eventually to move this into OWL. And as it's different than doing this in the plant ontology, because all the diseases have really two components, actually. They have a host and a causal agent. And so it's a little more complicated than just creating like the plant structure ontology. So we thought it was very important to use the full Latin names for the organisms and relate those back to the NCBI taxonomy. So these are just some other guidelines for the students, like just use singular terms, all these things that Barry has taught us over the years. And then we, you know, so let me just skip down before I come back to the problems we had. So we designed this in terms of having three top-level root classes: a branch for the plant diseases, a branch for the causal agent. Oops, undo it here. Let me do that. A branch for the causal agent, and then a branch for the host plant. And the way we structured this under plant disease was we have a class for plant bacterial disease, plant fungal disease, and plant viral disease. And then broken down under each of those categories, we would have rice bacterial disease, maize bacterial disease, and wheat. So right now we're just working with rice, maize, and wheat. And then, for example, and I can show you this, that we've got a development browser that we have set up that we're using. So, and I'll show you this in a second, but I want to give you an overview, first of all, of how we sort of set up the design of the ontology. And then, for example, under rice bacterial disease, we took the name, so like this one, bacterial blight. The problem is the names of the diseases are quite generic. Like they just call it bacterial blight. And then this is the causal agent with the attribution of who named it and so on. So the process was we took this information from the APS website, we put it into the spreadsheet, created a term to describe it. This is the disease common name from the APS site, opened a tracker, created a tracker item for it. Then we gave it a actual name, and we prefixed those names with rice so that we could differentiate the bacterial blight in other species, because there are many things called bacterial blight. And then we looked into the actual pathogen that is the causal agent. And in some cases, this is straightforward, but in many, many cases, this is not straightforward. So in this case, it's not too complicated. The pathogen is called Xanthomonas oryzae, Pathivar oryzae. And then, so the main pathogen name, that's the main pathogen name. And then the full pathogen name with the attribution on it is put in as a narrow synonym. But in many cases, oh, and then we have a link to the an XREF to NCBI ID for that pathogen name. And then we have the alternate Latin name, because there's many, many, all of these pathogens, especially the bacteria, are very complicated because they're changing the pathogen names. And I've been working with a number of experts in the department here of plant pathology about what the precise name is that we're supposed to be using, and we're creating links to those. So,
yeah, Laurel, I have just a question.
Yeah, okay.
You say, so the disease can affect a species, but it can also affect only an organ of the species.
Yes, that's true. There are.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so how do you want to put this in your modem?
What was the question?
She's asking, you know, if it affects a specific organ of the plant, like, for instance, the spike or the leaf.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah,
I would say that is a disease modeling aspect. So, I don't think it's going to be here. So, I think this is all opening up good questions in some ways. So, and can you show us an example? Yes.
Yes. So here under plant disease, so here we have the plant. I'll show you that we're using the same example. We'll use the rice bacterial disease. Okay. So we have rice, rice blight, bacterial blight. So this one that we just looked at was, let me make sure I'm on the right one here. Rice bacterial blight. Rice bacterial.
Search by the ID.
Yeah.
No, you have it.
Oh, did I have it?
You have it there. Go back.
Yeah.
Right before the go up. Yeah, that's it. Hey, no.
Right there. Right, got it. Come on, Michael. So here's the term, the actual term for rice bacterial blight. And what we were doing was relating this disease to the pathogen, and we had created a term for the pathogen. And there's all the different people that have worked on this over the last couple of years. And then there's a relationship to the pathogen. We have a couple of new relationships that we created in the ontology for causal agent of, or primary host of. So as we're moving through this, we're finding that things are getting a little more complicated than we initially started out thinking they would be. First of all, the complication of the names, which doesn't seem to be an insurmountable problem. We're working through that issue with each of the sets of names that we're dealing with. One thing we're finding is that the American Phytopathological Society website is quite out of date. The bacterial names especially, I have a colleague here in the department who's an expert in plant pathogenic bacteria, and she's been helping me a little bit, and she said that they're changing or creating new names for about 750 bacterial species a year. So these names are as they're sequencing all these different species, they're moving them from one genus to another. So we've gone to quite a bit of effort to make sure that we're using the correct name. The NCBI, and so, for example, in the source column here, this shows here, for example, on the rice foot rot bacterial disease, the APS has it listed as Erwinia chrysanthemi Burkholder, but that name has been changed to Dickeyi chrysanthemi. And so what we did was we put the primary name in as Dickeyi chrysanthemi with the NCBI source, and then we put in the alternate name and put in an XREF to the APS site.
But the NCBI ID stays the same?
The NCBI ID is the same, yes. And on the NCBI site, they list this as a synonym.
So, Barry, the way I'm looking at it, I think there are two components going around here. In the PDO. One is the flat list of the species-specific genes, and other two components which we have is the causal agent and the host plant. Actually, it's not the host plant what you're referring to. It's actually host species.
Right.
The host species and under causal agent, I think probably there would be two aspects, abiotic and biotic agents, and biotic agents have the pathogens in it. So, but they're all causal agents. As of now, they're all taxonomy names in that sense. And I think if what I was getting at it is that it will take a lot of effort to maintain the synonyms and updates to the taxonomy, which changes very frequently in this system. So instead of us hard coding some or embedding the ontology as a different taxonomy as a different class in this ontology, would be a lot of effort. So I was thinking maybe we should just maintain one taxonomy file, which has all the organisms that we need to associate with the disease, both the host species and the pathogen. And remember, we've just included only the host and the pathogen. We haven't even looked at the secondary vector. There are secondary species as well through which this vector or this thing passes through. So suggestion, which I was coming across, is that in this PDO, we should just limit only the list names and synonyms of the species classified by the host plant, and have taxonomy in a separate thing, but try to connect the two in the disease network ontology or infectious disease ontology or something else kind of things.
Right. So, Dennis, I mean, Pankaj, I'm not clear what you're saying. So create a separate ontology for the diseases?
No.
I mean, for the causal agents?
PDO should have, what I'm getting at is that the PDO should have only the list of diseases, the names of the diseases.
So
all the other relationships to other terms, which such as taxonomy of organism, host and taxonomy of pathogens, should come from the taxonomy ontology, which we may choose to maintain or maybe we...
The problem is that, you know, I agree that in the theory of that, but there isn't an ontology of these diseases that we can use. I mean, the causal agents.
So the NCBI actually has it.
They have a taxonomy, but it's not...
Wait. I think there is on the OBO Foundry, there is an updated taxonomy OBO file from NCBI. I don't know how frequently it is generated, but maybe we can just take a slice of that based on the terms that we need.
But we're still going to have to have a list of those names in order to pull them.
I'm telling you that that can be maintained as a separate ontology.
Well, it could be maintained as a separate ontology, but I agree. And you and I talked about the gramine taxonomy.
There is gramine taxonomy, and I think our environment ontology also has lots of pathogen names in it, because those pathogens are taxon. So there is an overlap in the EO, there is an overlap in the NCBI ontology, and there is an overlap in PDO. Now we have to maintain and synchronize all three places to be consistent, which we are not doing it right now.
So. Well, no, but this is why we're trying to get this set up and discuss this before we go any further with this, because...
Right. So I think that
this is what you're talking about, the NCBI?
Yes.
So can I make a couple of points?
Please, yes.
I think it's these are indeed very important questions, and we need to be very clear about what we want to do before we start to do a lot of work. So the first thing I would remind people of is the plant infectious disease ontology work that we did with Ramona.
Right, and I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, and so I think that there are two dimensions here, and we probably need both. The one dimension is understanding what a plant disease is for any plant. And I think there are probably two kinds of plant disease: plant infectious disease, which we've worked on, and then plant non-biotic causal agent disease, which I haven't worked on at all. I don't know what is to be said on that side. So I'll focus just on the plant infectious disease side. There we need to understand what a plant infectious disease involves at every level, from the omics level all the way up to symptoms and agricultural conditions and so forth. And that can be done almost certainly just once.
Right.
In just the same way that we created the plant ontology just once, and then we gave the result to the specialists in different plant species to use as the basis for specific wood ontologies or daffodil ontologies.
Right.
We need to do something similar here.
That's the idea, yes.
But now there is a second kind of approach to disease ontology, which is illustrated by the human disease ontology. And the human disease ontology is really just like Pankaj's list. It's a long, loosely structured list of the different diseases which occur. For each disease, we give an ID, and then we can associate different kinds of data with that ID, and that's a useful thing to do. I think we need to do both of those things. But the problem, as one of you, I think it was Pankaj, pointed out, is that for the human disease ontology, you really just create a list of diseases. But for the plant disease ontology, you have two other things you need to keep track of. One is the species in which those diseases occur, and the other is, for the infectious case anyway, the pathogen.
Right.
And so we need to work out the structure of both of those kinds of approaches before we start to invest in populating long lists. That's all I wanted to say.
Right. So I think those are very valid discussions or discussion points, and I think we should keep talking about this as we move forward with this.
So, as Barry pointed out, kind of things, I think it's very important to me what I'm thinking at it as now, because I just mentioned that we have these pathogens in environment ontology, we have these pathogens in trait ontology.
Well, in the environment ontology, it's actually treatments or...
irrespective of it.
Right.
The name is a taxonomy name, okay?
Right. So, Pankaj, what I'm thinking is, though, is if we have them in some place like this, like in the PDO or PSO, as it's going to be called eventually, and then in the EO, we could just reference those terms. I wouldn't want to have a separate, you know, we can make cross-links between the ontology. I don't think that's a big problem between the EO and the PDO. And we also have them in the TO.
Right. So, but what I'm thinking is that because you would have,
it's all going to tie together.
Right. But all the taxons, what I'm getting is that, as trying to suggest, is that all the taxon names should be maintained only in one place.
Right. That makes sense. So we just have to decide where we want to maintain them.
Yeah.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think for a disease purposes, this taxon is a causal agent, but somebody else who wants to study that agent in some other aspect, maybe on a metagenomics aspect, where adding that agent in the environment actually benefits the plant, then it's better to maintain all those taxons in a taxonomy ontology.
Well, that's fine. We can just export all these into a different ontology and change
yes.
them. But I mean, let's do that before we go any further down the road with this, because we've already, you know, spent a lot of time creating the crosslinks and so on. But it's fine. I totally agree. We don't want to maintain them.
I also think that we should bear in mind that the stress ontology is connected to the disease ontology.
Well, so
we
yes,
need to do some thinking on that side.
So the plan that I understood that we were proceeding with was that this disease ontology would transition into the stress ontology.
Okay, now let me just make a plea that people start to do some thinking about stress in a more general sense. So by stress, I also mean things like climatic stress or
right
water shortage stress.
Right.
Or flood stress.
So those things would all come under this, the abiotic stress category?
Okay, that's where we need to do some fresh thinking, because that's going to be very important for the UN environment work.
Right, right. So we had envisioned originally having an abiotic causal agent, which would link to ENVO or the EO conditioned ontology. And then we'd have, these are more, these are not really exactly diseases, but they're more.
These are the conditions.
No, I don't mean the actual causal agents, but when the plant exhibits like drought stress, it's not really a disease.
Yeah, I agree.
It's more of a condition.
Condition
yeah.
of the plant.
Yeah.
But there is this, the drought stress on the side of the drought.
Right.
And there is the effect of the drought stress on the side of
the plant. Right.
The effect on the side of the plant is a bit like a disease. Mm-hmm. But we still need to study the stress on the side of the flood.
Mm-hmm. Right. That,
actually, the UN is already thinking about those things. So they are. They've begun to do work on defining terms relating to stress along the lines that we're going to need. And we need to make sure that what they do and what we do is compatible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So maybe, Laurel, I think you can look at NALT or AgroVoc. I think they have a lot of diseases and stress, different stress in the...
I'm sure they do.
because you said that... Yeah. The source that you use was outdated, so
I think the APS site and definitely is not as up to date as we would like. But we have a number of other sources that we're using.
Okay.
For example, the NCBI is one, and the other one is the Encyclopedia of Life, which is actually an excellent reference. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the EOL. I think Dennis may have had some involvement with that.
I've looked at the EOL, and I think when I was creating the pathogen list and putting them in the EO that we developed, many of the pathogens, if they were not sequenced, they were not in the NCBI. That was a problem. So those I added it, although I think you can refer it to the GRIN taxonomy, which is the USDA taxonomy.
Yeah.
It is most up-to-date. And NCBI, if there is an entry, it refers to the GRIN, actually. So for plant purposes, is your perfect place to look for.
In our experience, the NCBI is really getting more and more comprehensive because all of these things are being sequenced if they haven't already been sequenced.
Right.
Yeah.
But many times...
Even the viruses are really complex, but...
You want something which has a very stable ID, and USDA folks were okay kind of thing. So...
Yeah, so I mean, we can definitely put XRAFs into anything we want. We can EOL or GRIN or AgriVoc.
Yes, but I think what I was getting is that while we are doing these rice, maize, and wheat, Murray Angelique, the crop ontology that you have for rice, maize, and wheat, they should have all these diseases in your list.
Yes. Yeah,
I believe that those are the sources for the most up-to-date information based on the pathologists that work on those kinds of things in those crops.
Yeah, but we don't have the pathogen or
yeah
no you don't have pathogen, but you have the name of the name of the disease because name
let's go and take a look
that's we have the name of the disease that's all.
At least but you know the common names there's many many common names around the world that are being used as you'll find if you look closely at these. So what would be a good example to look at, like maybe maize?
Yeah, maize or wheat. Yeah. And if you go to stress to
stress. So, and so my thinking was that as we develop these in the PSO, that we could put in cross references to these, like corn stunt is one we've done. Yeah. And that agrees with what we have. The phytoplasma. It's a phytoplasma disease. But my thinking is that as we, you know, create these in our plant stress ontology, then you can build in the XRAFs here and also probably to TO terms and EO terms.
Yeah, but right now she can straight away go and create a PDO cross-reference to this thing if there was a list of the diseases only.
Yeah, we have corn stunt.
Yeah.
We actually worked on corn stunt not too long ago. Yeah. And we have another group that we're working with called FiBase, who are wanting to use the PDO terms, which is why I think this is really important that we talk about this, because before this gets out in the community, we need to kind of get a decision how we're doing it and, you know, whether we're using PDO names for these. Personally, I don't really care... where we put the pathogens, if they're in the PDO or if they're in some other list, we just kind of need to make a decision on that and so that we can move ahead and before this gets out in the community and people start using it. It's going to be harder to change later. So I think the process is going to be the same. We're going to need to go through and verify each one and double check each one and make sure we have the appropriate crosslinks. So it's fine either way. You know, once we have them characterized, then we're in good shape. So
I think this is getting out to be a very straightforward one, probably. And I think we should bring Chris on this discussion.
Sure.
Because if these are, this is the standard way of defining the disease ontology term, like a maize bacterial disease is caused by XYZ, and that exists in a taxonomy, then this can be, we can have a term genie reference to create all these terms. We don't have to do, it's a straightforward template.
Well, creating the terms is not the hard thing. It's doing the research on them.
No, that is okay. But yeah. But if all,
yeah, we could definitely have
definition, all this definition needs is the name of the, an ID of the taxon that we're talking about. Because right now, if we do create something new later on for taxonomy, you will have to go back and
well,
place all of them and the names that are coming in all as well. Because sometimes what you just showed, that sometimes the name would change 2 years down the road and the definition still carries that name.
Well, that's a possibility. I mean, we can't do too much about that. But that's going to be the same no matter where we put them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
you can directly use the URI provided by NCBI. I mean, they have URIs for all the taxon.
Yeah.
So maybe you can.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thought. But so there's lots of complications that we could talk about. I think we probably should wrap up for today and talk about this some more on our next call because we've already run past the hour.
So,
15 minutes. So
can we make an effort to bring Chris on the call next time for the ontology one?
Well, I invited him, but this is not a good time for him. So he didn't respond to me. I make an effort every time to include
him. No, I agree. But
I can't force him to come.
Right. So Barry, if you can have some ideas, let us know. And then,
yeah. We could have another call at a separate time if that works better for Chris. Yeah, absolutely. Whatever it takes. So,
yeah, we don't want to wait for too long.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of concerned because, like, Phibase is pulling out these numbers, the PDO names, as quickly as we can make them. So,
So I think it would be a good idea to create a list of 3 or 4 action items which involve Chris, and then just tell Chris that we want a special call for 20 minutes or so, just so that he's aware of why we've put this list together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we can do at least part of the work with Chris by email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason why we have this early in the morning here is that we want to be able to include our friends from France. I don't think you want to do it at 8:00 at night. So we could, you know, we might have to break out into 2 separate groups to discuss things. So that's fine. I appreciate everybody making time today.
Yeah. So. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we can keep discussing this. And, you know, there's a lot of other complications. The actual structure of the definitions is probably not the best way to do it either, because there's actually a lot of cases where there's more than one pathogen causing a disease, and also diseases that, like, one pathogen causes diseases in more than one host. So that's another big issue that we really need to talk about.
So what is the issue if the same spiroplasma causes diseases in several?
Okay, well let's go and look at a bacterial one because I haven't got the spiroplasmas in there yet. And I don't know if this is actually, so like, let's look at, so like Pectobacterium Cartavora subspecies Cartavorum is defined, the way we're doing it right now is defined as a bacterial biotic causal agent that causes this maize bacterial stock disease, but it also causes maize bacterial top rot disease. And see, in the APS system, they just, this is one disease name, which, but really they're actually two diseases.
No, but so we need to confirm it with a maize person. Every time a maize bacterial stalk disease appears, the top rot disease also appears. That's why probably they have both the both of them at the same.
No, I think they're alternate.
The alternate?
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I mean this is and I in addition to phybase, I've been working with Mary Schaefer and we have a huge list of diseases from Mary. Mm-hmm. For maize, and so we've been consulting all these different sources. Oh, and on here it's called corn, so that's why I can never find corn. Okay. So you know the common names are very loosely used. So we've been very thorough and careful about how we, but the problem is like Xanthomonas campestris might cause diseases in several different plants species.
Several different species.
Several different species. So that's another problem of defining the pathogens.
You're coming across as how to create the logical definitions.
Yeah. So this is another thing we kind of need to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So whereas. If we leave it as saying is a bacterial biotic where is that disease actually? This is not a disease.
This is a causal agent.
Yes. So Barry, if we just leave it saying that is a maize bacterial disease, at that level, that is the definition. And the rest of the definitions are either created logically on the fly to integrate what was the causal agent or something else. So you leave the causal agent from the...
Well,
that's the sort of strategy we used for the infectious disease ontology. We create a kind of template, and then we allow that template to be populated more and more in detail by specifying what is the pathogen, what is the vector, what is the host, and so forth. And for Staph aureus, for instance, we now have something like 110 different Staph aureus ontologies because there are 110 different recognized strains, all of which have important medical features, which we use the ontologies to keep track of. And we're going to need to take account of bacterial strains in plants also, I imagine.
So this, what I'm showing on the screen here is an example of that, Barry, and this is a very small example.
So,
we have these different strains in the plant bacteria.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of them have a lot more than this. And these all have their own NCBI numbers.
Right. So what I got from Barry and what I was thinking is that, let's say, for example, I don't know if it is going to happen that way or not. Let's say if this PDO has only a list of diseases, then your definition is strictly referencing only to its parent, saying is a maize bacterial.
Yeah, exactly.
And then rest of the component that is caused by is filled in by some computational method automatically or by an
or manually. So it's good to have manual checking in any case.
Right, or because you have the inferred tree based on the, if you go to the stress ontology where lots of connections and relations will appear, we can create a comment or a suggested definition.
Yeah.
Saying this is based on the inferences drawn on the relationships. So PDO in that sense is just limited to the names of the diseases classified by their species of host.
Yeah, and that will work only if we have good definitions for the very high-level terms and relations.
Yes.
Because they will then constrain what people can fill in lower down.
Mm-hmm. So right now what I can say that I don't know if I have any annotations to the pathogen. Let's say all the diseases that we are seeing here, people can quickly go ahead and annotate that disease that can be associated to a germplasm or to a QTL or to a gene, that this provides the resistance. So these names can straight away be used for annotation purposes from that perspective. And the name,
right.
And once
that's
again,
not a problem.
And once again, the same names you would also use for creating trait ontology, saying response to or something in the trait ontology saying rice phytoplasma disease tolerance.
Yep. Yeah, right. And we have quite a few of these in the trait ontology already.
Right, and that is an immediate application right away, independent of whether we have the pathogen or causal agent in it right now or not. Right?
Everything we do is incremental.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings up actually another point, but I think maybe we should continue this discussion at our next call, because we need to do some work on the trait terms that relate to these. It's all very interrelated, and once we get to the plantiome, get this integrated in the plantiome, all these things will interlink. So,
For example, the resistance, the moment that we added the word in resistance in the trait name, actually it means it's a phenotype. So fungal disease response or would be the trait name, and the scoring would be resistance or susceptibility.
Right. So this should really be disease response.
Disease response is your stress or disease stress, and then.
No, the trait should be the response, and then we should have resistance and susceptible.
Yeah.
So this section of the
I don't like I don't like the term response because the trait is still there, even if the response is never activated, because the trigger is never there. The trait is something which is the disposition to the response.
Right. I think the response is also a process.
Exactly.
Which exists in the gene ontology.
Yeah.
Quite a number of them. So I think at some place where I had, instead of using resistance or susceptibility, I had something in the trait ontology. I don't remember it right now.
Yeah, so that's one virtue.
Now these are all listed as resistance.
Yeah, so you should look at the infectious disease ontology, because there we did a very careful job to distinguish those terms. Mm-hmm. And my only regret is that we didn't talk there about stress in the sense of environmental stress, because right. I think that is something where the plant ontology is in fact ahead of the human disease mm-hmm. ontology work that we do.
So you're talking about the human infectious disease ontology.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Which we created a plant version of as a kind of experiment, but now we need to draw lessons from both of those for treatment of terms like resistance, susceptibility, and so forth.
Yeah. And there are PAIDO terms. What I was discussing with Mary last week, Mary Schaefer of Maize GDB, they don't like the fact that these are all called, in the TO, that these are all called resistance.
Yeah, she's
because
right.
If you look at the definition, it doesn't even match the definition.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, the
trait ontology
compared to susceptible or reference plants
needs
so.
To be very carefully overhauled.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Does PAIDO, incidentally.
So
that's a big job.
We were thinking maybe we could call this like fungal disease response and then have resistance and susceptible responses as child terms. So something we can think about as
there is a way to do that, but we need to keep dispositions and their realizations cleanly distinct.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we should probably... Dennis, do you have any comments? You've been really quiet. You've got your mic muted, you know, so if you're talking, I can't hear you.
Well, you know, that way
you
don't hear me ratting around or whatever. No, not really. I was just sort of trying to learn about... I have to think about this a lot,
okay.
This biology stuff. Because it's very complicated. I can see what's going on. And we also are going to have to enter the world of Michael Risey, probably.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
And some other things like that. Which,
right.
You also introduced Michael Risey to establish the saplings and things like that.
Yeah.
And 85% of your plants have mycorrhizae associations.
But there's some important crop plants that do not.
Right.
And one of them is beta, which is why it's so susceptible to certain herbicides and pesticides. Because of the mycorrhizal fungi that are in them do not chew those up as carbon source.
What's the plant?
Sugar beets.
Oh, sugar beets. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not sure about carrots, you know, but sugar beets for sure lack mycorrhizae. So they're extremely sensitive to certain pesticides and herbicides in extremely small doses. It changes the root anatomy. It's bizarre. We can talk about it another time.
Yeah, I'm familiar with mycorrhizae a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean with what happens in beta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll continue this discussion next time.
Okay, in 2 weeks.
Yes, on the next scheduled meeting is for the 23rd.
Yeah.
And if we can have a couple of pointers for Chris, then we can bring him up for a short talk, short thing. And that's
Okay, we can talk about that afterwards, yeah.
I'm out of here.
So, Marie Angelique, can you pass the host privileges back to me now?
I don't know how to do that.
Well, I will stop sharing. Yeah, bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Before you hang up, Marie Angelique, yeah. Let me see if I could just take it back.
Make host.
Yeah. Yeah. Make me the host. There we go. Okay. So it's possible when the call ends that the recording might save to you because I think it was running from your end. So if it does, you can just share it with me.
Okay, I will use Dropbox.
Yeah, you can put it on Dropbox and send me a link to it because this was a pretty important discussion today.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna...